This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3467 for Tuesday the 16th of November 2021. Today's show is entitled, Proton Mail in the Terminal. It is the first show by new host DNT, and is about 38 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, one way of doing Proton Mail in the Terminal.
This is DNT. This episode is a response to 3431 by Black Kernel, the one called Living in the Terminal, because he talked about doing his email in the terminal and being a Proton Mail user. So after a little while, I did find a way to do it that's working out okay for me. So I thought I'd make this first episode that I'm posting about how I'm doing that. So here are the applications I use in the terminal in combination to read and send emails. So first of all, of course, Proton Mail Bridge, that is run in Tmux. Then for syncing, I use iSync, whose command is actually mbsync. You can also use offline IMAP, which is written in Black Kernel's favorite language, Python. Then next, the not much application is what tags and searches emails. It uses some other application for the actual indexing of the emails themselves. But not much itself is more about the tagging of the emails. Then a few is an application for moving around email files. And then it's got like some filters that are run automatically. I mean, you can run them on the command line, but I just have them run as hooks in not much. And in this script that I run to update everything, to sync everything. Then a lot is the actual mail user agent, so to speak. That's the one where you read your emails and where you send emails. And you can also do other operations like tag stuff. And of course do not much searches as well. So it's like a front end for not much, which is usually otherwise run only on the command line. So, and then MSMTP is what sends the messages, and W3M is the text-based browser that actually reads HTML emails and shows them in a decent readable form in a lot. You can use whatever other command you choose. It works via mailcap, so you just put mailcap entry, and I'll show you later. I've got this function, like a shell function that's in the ZSHRC file, that tells it to open a lot after populating the mailcap file with the command I want, depending if I want to open my HTML emails in, all the emails actually in an actual browser, in my case Qt browser usually, or in the text browser W3M. So next, three shell functions that I put in my RC file. Yeah, that's one of the things I learned from the episode from Black Kernel, is I didn't realize that you could just define a function in your RC file and then just call it from your shell like it's a command. So I have a folder full of scripts that I maintain for, you know, part of my shell environment basically. And so now I see that I could just put them in. There are several of them that would make sense to, instead of have them as actual scripts, just have them in the RC file, much simpler. And also another thing that I liked is that you can type which and then the command. And whereas normally it'll tell you the path to the script, if it's a function in your RC file, that'll just print out the whole function, which I think is way better. Anyway, so for a little while I was using Moo for E in Emacs. That's Moo is the name of the application, and Moo4E is like the Emacs module to use it. And it's not bad, but it looks like in Arch Linux, it means you have to get Moo from the Arch user repository. And then also in the Doom Emacs, I use Doom Emacs, it's a Emacs configuration. It seems like they're always changing their email module, and a few times it stopped working on my computer. So, and also it just wasn't that great. And I kind of wanted to move the email out of Emacs just to not do so much in Emacs. You know, although Emacs is the editor that does everything else, that edits text and also does everything else, doesn't mean you want to do everything else in it. So, anyway, I got tired of that and started looking for a way to just do email in the terminal in just the simplest way I could find. So this was it. It wasn't simple to set it up, but it's been simple to use. So, of course, everyone's heard of Mutt, but for me, so far, the initial onboarding for that has been a little too much, you know, setting up that configuration file. And also, like much of email, you know, it's like email applications in the terminal, specifically, certainly in the terminal, they really reflect how fragmented and messed up email is. You know, even Mutt, you use, there's like Mutt dash not much to use not much searches as virtual folders in Mutt. So yeah, it seems like everything is actually using like three other things in the background. And so yeah, like I listed here, I'm using eight different applications to just read my damn emails. That's how crazy that is. But anyway, the way I finally got it set up works okay, and I'm liking it. So anyway, so I don't doubt that one day I will move to Mutt perhaps, but so far this is working pretty well. Mainly the drawback of what I'm doing is that not much and a lot, they kind of by default, they don't really care where your messages are. And there's not really an easy way to move messages from one directory to another. Not much kind of wants to just treat all your emails, all your directories, everything in all of your mail directories. They just want to treat it as one thing, as just one big repository. And I kind of like that too. I actually keep my local folder of mail is just one folder, and then I just have tags in it. The way you can overcome that is with the application AFU, which can automatically run queries, not much queries, in certain folders and then move the returned files to another folder. You can define those rules per folder, and we'll go through the ones I've made. So moving on, the mail user agent is a lot, which has a terminal-based interface, relies primarily on not much to find messages to show you. You can choose your own send mail, editor, and address book commands. I use MSMTP, Vim, and card, respectively. Card is K-H-A-R-D. So when you're composing a message, you can get tab completion for your contacts. It renders your plain text emails very nicely. This a lot, I mean. You know, it color codes everything to help you keep track of the replies and all that, the inline replies. And then a quick aside about this. After, when you subscribe to some hacker mailing lists like this, you notice how people reply online like that. And then finally you understand what Google was trying to do with Google Wave way back when. Which was supposed to be going to replace email entirely, right? This way of communicating via email that we see a lot of people do in mailing lists about open source projects, it's pretty interesting replying in line like that in the middle of the other person's email. And then you are kind of collectively building this one document, it seems, which is kind of what Google Wave was. Anyway, moving on. So it renders your plain text emails pretty nicely. Also shows HTML email as well with W3M or your choice of a text-based browser. And it can also open them in a regular web browser if you have an X session running. Not much is for tagging and searching in a mail directory, which you may know is a way to store emails in which each message is one file. Its main subcommands for not much are not much tag and not much search. With tag, you give it a query and some tags to add and or remove. With search, you give it a query and some information about what kind of output you want. Two key things to know about not much is, like I said before, it doesn't really care where your messages are stored. You tell it where your messages are, and it'll pick up everything in any subfolders, and it'll just kind of treat them as one big repository. Now, there are ways to query by the subfolder that the messages are in, but if you use it, you kind of understand that it's not really what it's meant to do. It also doesn't, not much, doesn't really care about individual messages. It cares about threads. So that can sometimes be a little confusing because although the individual messages can be tagged, whenever you tag a message, you tag a message, not the thread. But if only one message in a thread has a certain tag, a search for that tag will return every message in that thread. So the way not much determines what thread a message belongs to is also somewhat greedy. For example, I once started a reply in a lot, and then I decided it wasn't a reply after all, so I rewrote the subject line. My sent message after that, after sending the message was still added to that thread. So I deleted and re-imported the message into Not Much's repository, a few times, before I finally got it to recognize it as its own new thread, not a reply to the first thread. I found in the end I removed information from the message headers and stuff, and in the end, just from the quoted text below, it knew to add that message to that existing thread, which I thought was kind of impressive, but also maybe a little too greedy, because normally you will have a there's a an entry in the headers that tells you what the original message was, right? But anyway, even removing that, it still found the original thread. All right, so you might sometimes have a thread that contains messages that are in different mail directories, and not much does not care about that. It'll show you all of them. It won't show you the folder the message is in, also, in its default output. You can, of course, get the file path as an output, which and then in that case you will see where the message is, but by default it won't give you that. So anyway, and you can narrow your search by what's in a folder by using the query folder colon the folder that it's in. I wouldn't go as far as saying that the relative disregard for folders is a downside. In a way, it's one less thing for you to be aware of, you know. And also, folders in emails are very often not really folders, they're labels, right? In modern, most things like Gmail and stuff, the folders aren't really folders. Especially, you know, because the thing that shows you that they're not is because there's that stupid all mail folder. That pulls in everything. So, So basically the thing that I, all right, so about Proton Mail. So Proton Mail honestly has been kind of a disappointment for me. I wish I hadn't switched to it. The only thing I like about it is the domain pm.me, which is very short. I like that. But yeah, it has several problems, you know. Recently there was a post on Hacker News about how about password managers, and they basically argued that you shouldn't use a password manager that works that's a browser extension, right? Because browser extensions are you know, a security risk. But also he the person that wrote it wrote what I found interesting was they wrote about how any service, any hosted service that says it's end-to-end encrypted, it can basically be, since you don't control the code, you don't upgrade it yourself and all that, you know, some hacker or some state agent could take control of the service and then update the code to compromise it. So sure, like your messages supposedly are saved, they're encrypted with your GPG key, and you have the passphrase for that key. That's all great, but you know, the code could conceivably be changed to save a copy of your messages once you go and decrypt it. Just go ahead and save a copy of them in plain text as well, because I want to look at them. You know, that could conceivably happen. So in a way, that kind of means that these claims about end-to-end encryption are kind of flawed, you know. And also we have to consider, you know, in Proton Mail, I have never written a message. I mean, maybe once or twice I've messaged someone who also had a Proton Mail account. And you know, how many of us have GPG keys and have thought about the whole GPG encrypted email thing, but have never actually communicated with in GPG encrypted email. That's another thing. So I've just come to the conclusion that, you know, I still don't really trust the Proton Mail server. I don't really want to have my emails in some server. So I always, from time to time, I always move the messages to a local folder here when I don't need them anymore, but I want to keep them. I just move them and I don't keep them in the server because I don't need it. So I could as well do the same thing with a Gmail account, you know. But then yeah, there are other disadvantages. Like Gmail, I think gets a lot more spam than other stuff. Like I get very little spam in my Proton Mail account. So, and I think that's not just because it's been around for less time. I think, you know, I don't know. Gmail accounts, I think, get more spam. So you rely more on on Gmail's built-in spam filter. And all right, moving on. So, yeah, Proton Mail, you know, Proton Mail Bridge kind of sucks, and the way they implemented their IMAP thing is not great. You get your messages, like say if you delete a message from a folder, it'll even if you delete it from the trash, it'll still end up in that all mail folder with no tag, which is just crazy. Like if you open your all mail folder in Proton Mail in the web app, the folder that the messages are in are appear kind of like as if they were a tag, you know. So, but then you have the archive folder, you have the trash folder and inbox folder, all those things. If you delete a message via IMAP from the trash or from whatever folder, then the message will show up in your all mail folder with no little tag there. So it's like it's in no folder. It's just floating in your you know, it's like on the floor, I guess. So what is that? And so these aren't folders then, you know? So then the only way to delete a message from Proton Mail is to move it to the trash and then to go to the web app or your mobile app and empty the trash. That's really stupid. And even in Gmail, you can configure it to once a message is deleted from the last IMAP folder, just delete it. You can do that and it works fine. But not Proton Mail. Proton Mail, it just puts it on the floor and it's there forever if you don't go and take care of it. Several disadvantages there. That means you have to sync the trash folder, which otherwise you wouldn't have to, so that you can, via IMAP, move messages to the trash. And then later at some point, you have to go on their web app or the mobile app and empty the trash. Here a quote from the article about password managers. Despite what your vendor says, if their network is compromised, the attacker can read your passwords. Here are some selected marketing claims from password manager vendors. No one apart from you, not even us, has access to your passwords. We keep your information private, secure, and hidden, even from us. Your data is secured in a way that only you can view it and manage it. Our employees can't. These claims are all nonsense. An attacker or a malicious insider in control of the vendor's network can change the code that is served to your browser, and that code can obviously access your passwords. This isn't far-fetched. Altering the content of websites, defacement is so common that it's practically a sport. The reality is that you have to trust your vendor to maintain their infrastructure and keep it safe. The existence of encryption, bank grade or not, does not alter this. Perhaps you think this isn't a big deal. You already trusted them when you installed their software. Fine. But these claims are front and center in all marketing, so vendors must believe their customers care about it. I think these claims are bending the truth to assuage legitimate concerns. End quote. The writer argued that any service that stores your data and says it's end-to-end encrypted, if you don't control the server, at the end of the day, someone like a state actor could compel the company to release an update, which we won't hear about, and put an end-to-end encryption. So combined with the reality that most of our emails arrive to Proton Mail unencrypted anyway, makes me seriously doubt the validity of any of these privacy-focused email services. Like I said, the reason I'm still on Proton Mail is just because I don't want to change my email address again. But if I could, I would. If I could pay for an email company that implements a very straightforward IMAP with folders, no all mail folder, and then and you know it's an independent company that that I feel confident about or whatever, that I could pay, I would. It would not have to have end-to-end encryption. Good luck finding such a service. Right, so I've got this function that's in the show notes called sync mail. I run it from the command line. So I'll come in, I'll run the alias PMB, which starts a new tmux session running the Proton Mail bridge CLI, and then that'll be running in tmux, and then immediately I do sync mail, and then here's what sync mail is going to do. First, it'll archive messages. So that means it'll take mails that I have tagged with the tag archive, and it'll copy them to a local archive folder. I've written it to use rsync to do this. You can have not much search give you the files with the full path separated by null characters, and then you can pipe that to rsync, and you can set it to read it. with having the null character as the separator. And you have to also give it the no capital R option, which is no recursive. So it won't copy the files with the full path. It'll just copy the files alone. And that's important because you may have files tagged with the word archive in multiple different directories, and we just want to pick them up and just dump them in the archive directory. So for the search query, obviously we'll have to do tag archive and not folder archive, because I want to copy there only the mails tagged archive that are not already in the archive folder. So then after that, it'll use a few to move mails. So there's a configuration file for a few that you can put in your regular config folder that defines what are the operations you want to do. I'll read through those later. Then after it does this, it runs mb sync to actually synchronize all the mailboxes with the IMAP folder from Proton Mail Bridge. And then finally it runs not much new to update the database. It just reads the mail directories and updates not much's database. And then there are also hooks that run before and after not much new. I think I only used the post hook. I don't think I used the pre hook. I think I moved those operations to this command here, to this function. And likewise, I could move the post hook operations to the function as well, and that would probably be good to make it more readable. So now a few operations that it does. So you gotta have my config file is in the show notes as well, so you can have a look there. You have a section called mail mover in which you define what folders we want to work on, what folders we want to look for mails to move in. So because I use mb sync, I have to use this option rename true, because of how mb sync works. Doesn't matter to get into it here. So then finally you have a bunch of the actual operations that you want for each folder. So like in the folders item, I listed all the mailboxes, all the mail directories that I want to look into. So PM for Proton Mail slash inbox, PM slash sent, PM slash mailings, which is where most of the mail I get goes. It's kind of like the, you know, newsletters and things like that. Then PM slash archive and PM slash trash, and finally Gmail slash inbox, because I also have a Gmail account. So then after that, I'd list PM slash inbox equals, and then you can have a series of structures like this, just space separated, that are in single quotes, the not much query, and then colon, and the directory you want to move the resulting messages to. So for example, PM slash inbox equals single quote tag killed, or tag archive colon PM slash trash. So any message that has the tag killed or the tag archive, I want to move it to the trash folder. And this is valid only for messages that are in the inbox folder, right? So now obviously tag killed, it's easy to see why I would want to move it to the trash. I also include tag archive because you may recall that at the first step of my function actually copied files with the tag archive to a local archive folder. So once I have a copy of that message in my local archive folder, I don't want it wherever it was in Proton Mail. So I'll move it to the trash. The reason I'll do that is because, as we know, if I just delete it, it'll be left on the floor. So then I have similar entries for the other folders in Proton Mail. And then finally I have the Gmail slash inbox I don't delete it. Like if I so sorry, the query is tag killed. So if this thing finds a message in Gmail slash inbox with the tag killed, it'll move it to my local trash folder. And what that'll do is the message will be my trash folder where I can keep it for as long as I like. And since it'll be gone from the Gmail inbox, it'll just be deleted from there. It won't be left in the all mail folder or anything like that. That's because I configured my Gmail account to once mail is removed from the last IMAP folder, just delete it. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So anyway, read through that configuration and you'll see what I'm talking about. So after the a few command, we'll do mb sync. That'll push all the changes that we just made based on the tags. We'll push them all to Proton Mail, and we'll pull any changes there. And I'll also share my mb sync rc file, which has some configurations there of note. Specifically, I have the Proton Mail trash folder. There's an option sync, and I have it as push new. So what that'll do is if there are new messages in the remote trash folder, I don't need them. Just don't send them to me. The sync push new option will only push new messages in the trash. So if I delete a message in the in my local trash, my local copy of the Proton Mail trash, if I delete anything, it won't be deleted from the Proton Mail trash. And if I so what that means basically is if I'm on the phone, on the mobile phone, and I get a message in Proton Mail, if I just delete it, if I just send it to the trash in the mobile app, it will never be downloaded when I sync my mails here because I've already trashed it. I don't want it. So that does that. I think that's all actually. Anyway, you can have a look at the whole thing in the show notes if you want. I also have my MSMTP configuration file here, which is pretty simple. Nothing much to talk about here. You can set a bunch of things here. Note that in all of my configuration files, I have all the passwords obtained from pass. So, for example, in MSMTP, you have a configuration password eval, and you can just make it a command, a shell command that will return the password. So of course that would be pass space Proton Mail Bridge, just to get my Proton Mail Bridge IMAP password. So going back, so finally, about opening messages in a lot. So what you need is you need to populate the .mailcap folder, excuse me, .mailcap file in your home folder. It has to have this line that says, for example, text slash HTML semicolon cube browser percentage s semicolon and a bunch of other stuff. So what I did was I created a function in my ZSHRC file that's called allot, and then as its first argument, if I have the string dash x for x session, then it'll echo the line, and it'll send it to the mailcap file. It'll echo the line that has the cube browser command to open the message in cube browser. And if it does not have that, so else, it'll echo the line that uses W3M to open mailcap. So that means if I run allot, ALOT, when I open messages, they'll open in the terminal and convert it into plain text, even when they're HTML messages. And if I do ALOT space hyphen X and I run it like that, then I'll get a lot the same way, but when I open a message, it'll open a Qt browser window and show me the message there. And you know, it'll render it nicely there. The only thing I've seen so far that still doesn't render right is this message from the US Postal Service that I get every day with the mail that I'm gonna get today. It doesn't show the images for some reason when I open them in Qt browser. Yeah, I think that's about it. So this was my first episode of Hacker Public Radio. I hope it made sense. Please leave a comment if there's anything that didn't make sense. Also leave a comment if you know of a better way to do any of this. Sorry that it's so much of it is in Python. That's for Black Kernel. So, and yeah, so the other day I sent an email message to the Hacker Public Radio newsletter, and I had the honor of having it read by Dave Morris in the community news later on. So yeah, DNT is actually, it doesn't really originally stand for Do Not Translate. It comes from my name, actually. But when I created the email account, it wouldn't let me do just three letters. So I decided to type out Do Not Translate, which is an acronym. Usually it's written as DNT a lot of times. And I work with local software localization, so DNT is kind of a it's sadly common to have monolingual developers or UX designers or whoever just decide that something should not be translated. DNT they'll write, and then yeah, it's if you're a support agent trying to help a customer in another country, non-English speaking, and then all of a sudden you run into some monstrous do not translate word that's like a, oh, it's a feature name, or you know, whatever ridiculous reason, let's not translate it, let's just throw these English words at people. So yeah, it's something that kind of irritates me, and I suspect others who also work in localization. Should always let the people in the countries, or at the very least people with language knowledge, decide what should or shouldn't be translated. Anyway, so do not translate is fine though. I'll go by DNT here, and that'll be just fine. So yeah, later I'll have a look at my other episode that I already recorded about porridge. Maybe it'll become one of the emergency shows. Hopefully it'll never be posted in the main feed. And I'll try and put out some other stuff too. Thanks everyone.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.